Good morning. This is Tracy Hales-Vass, right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico. Today I'm talking to Dr. Lee Francis about his shop, Red Planet Books, and his promotions of Native American comic book writers. And hello, Dr. Francis. How are you today?
I'm doing quite well.
You came to my attention when I read an article talking about your shop, Red Planet Books. So tell us a little bit about Red Planet Books.
Red Planet Books and Comics, the only Native comic shop in the world, and we are only one of three Native bookstores in the United States. We opened 2 years ago in June, and we have a great selection of new and used Native books. We have a wide selection of Native comic books, as well as other things to appeal to the indigenerds out there, including games, T-shirts, and other collectibles, toys, etc.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic, and it's quite focused to the Native writer and graphic artist, etc., right?
Yes, that's our main focus. When we opened the shop, we wanted to focus on really that niche market, so, you know, that where Native folks knew and anybody else that wanted to come down to the shop could find an assortment of reading materials that really focused on the Native and Indigenous story.
I think that's great. And you have been called the Stan Lee of Indian Country.
Yes, it's a wonderful title. It is a lot to live up to. That comes from the work that we've published so far. We are the primary publisher of Native comic books. We publish singles and trade paperbacks, which are the larger versions, as well as graphic novels. And our goal within the publishing that's Native Realities, which also is the overarching company for Red Planet. Native Realities, our goal is to try and change the perceptions of Native and Indigenous people by using pop culture. So that really comes around in comic books and digital media and games and toys, etc.
And you're also trying to sort of set straight some of the old archetypes that were wrong about the Native American in the movies and comics.
Absolutely. I think even today, we see this. There's a number of tropes and stereotypes that have been formed over the last 400 years since Native folks were first mentioned in popular media, way back in theater, when theater was the popular media for the general public. And so our work is really trying to create Native stories that are, one, maybe not highlighted at all, but two, really telling the stories of Native people not as tragic heroes or tragic sidekicks, but really within our own stories, that we are brilliant, vibrant, amazing communities and people with a bright and dynamic future.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I was at our local comic book store, Tales of Tomorrow, and saw your own publication. Yes, Six Killer. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I started writing Six Killer several years ago. And one of the things that I'm always fascinated with is sort of changing narratives, especially in popular media and archetypes. So I started to think about how I could tell a Native story of Alice in Wonderland. And right around the same time, the Violence Against Women Act was authorized, and it left Native women unprotected. They've made amendments since, but the first iteration was just infuriating because this is our own home communities. This is Native women who are not protected against, as if we're not women. Right? In a violence against women scenario. So as it, turned from an Alice in Wonderland story, it began to take on more meaning around telling the story of a Native woman whose sister is murdered and she is seeking revenge. And so I say it's essentially Kill Bill meets Alice in Wonderland set in Cherokee Country.
I love that. That's great. Did you do the artwork in the book?
I wrote the story. The artist is an incredible Native woman artist by the name of Wishoyo Alvitre out of California. She is an incredible illustrator in her own right, award-winning illustrator, and I am so fortunate to have her working on the comic that I've written, as well as another book that we're working on called Ghost River, which is a tale of the Paxton Massacre in outside of Philadelphia.
Yeah, the book is really beautiful.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. She does some incredible work, and I'm just so fortunate that I have such a strong artist to be able to portray the words that I've put down on paper.
Absolutely. Do you have other publications?
I'm featured in a couple of other stories. Tales of the Mighty Goat Talkers has a story of mine. There's another one that's coming out of the Michigan State University, but I have another comic story in there. And I will be featured with a comic story in the upcoming Moonshot 3, Volume 3.
I saw that you also do performance art, such as a story of growing.
Yes. So my past life, or my, you know, ancillary life, is one of a performance poet. And that is a story that I wrote many years ago for the Gala Pueblo Indian Public Cultural Center. They had a gala night. And so I wrote this poem called The Story of Growing. And performed it, and it's a lot about my son and a lot about Pueblo communities and histories and how we grow and how we farm and how that intertwines with all of our lives. We also founded the first ever Indigenous Comic-Con as a full-featured international event. There have been a few very small local ones prior to that, a few decades before, but we created a big event that we were able to showcase Native talent in all of the areas of nerddom.
And is this in Albuquerque?
It is in Albuquerque, and actually expanding it to two different locations this year, including Albuquerque, Denver, Colorado, and Melbourne, Australia.
That is international. And your website is, like you said, nativerealities.com.
Nativerealities.com, yep. And then you can find all the books that we carry at Red Planet Books and Comics, booksandcomics.com as well.
You're juggling quite a few balls, aren't you?
They all consolidate. I would say it's a small, but they all sort of consolidate around, you know, this area of pop culture. And they all sort of intertwine with each other. We have a bookstore where we sell books, where we have a trade show, and we put all of that stuff out into the world.
There's been an issue going around lately, and I think it also goes along with, as I said, changing the image of the Native American in pop culture. But there's a big problem with cultural appropriation in literature.
Yes.
Have you been seeing that yourself?
Oh, absolutely. And it's gone on for hundreds of years. I mean, it started, we weren't writing, we were telling our stories, but we weren't telling our stories to the, you know, the colonial audience. So a lot of folks were taking our stories and adapting them and showcasing Native people in a way that created these archetypes and a particular type of mythology that doesn't really reflect the ways in which we actually exist. And so when we see that, we can still see that showing up today. A lot of it is that the appropriation is really without, you know, consulting Native communities. And it's just using Native folks and Native identity as a prop. And
right.
It's always, you know, that's the hardest part. And it is, in many ways, it's a very fine line. But you can definitely tell when folks are, you know, appropriating, because they're focusing more on food feathers and fun, you know, food feathers and religion and ceremony than they are on the actual lived experience of Native folks. We have rich, vibrant histories that don't revolve, you know, about us doing ceremony all the time. It's like we were incredible traders. We were incredible merchants. We were incredible architects and, you know, astronomers and scientists and engineers. And that never gets mentioned because that doesn't fit the pop culture mentality about Native identity. Well, Native identity is about, like, oh, look how they dress up. Oh, their feathers and the bright colors and they dance.
Right.
So everything then gets boiled down to this existence that always revolves around a ceremonial state or a religious state. You know, everything we do is just like, well, this has some religious or ceremonial intent, something very deep. And I was like, it's a bucket. You know, we put water in it and we carried it from one place to another, just like you did, you know, like, so, you know, like, and maybe we, you know, and we understood the necessity of water for thousands of years. So we treated it as sacred and holy, unlike you, because you guys use everything that's disposable,
mm-hmm.
You know? So in that sense, when folks appropriate, they're dialing into this, you know, this iconography and this ideal of Native existence, or this mythology of Native existence, rather than, you know, focusing on how brilliant we were, are, and will be.
So do you think it is possible for someone who is not a Native American to write or draw or tell a story including Native Americans appropriately?
I do, but it takes some work, and it takes legwork that a lot of the times they're not interested in doing. It's easier for a lot of these writers that appropriate to just look up Native folks on Wikipedia.
Uh-huh.
And my take is go out and talk with the people. You're not going to make everybody happy. We know that even when we write, you know, from our own communities and our own standpoint, somebody's going to be like, well, that's not my experience.
Right.
That's writing.
Right.
That's creativity. We understand that. But if you're not even bothering to do the basic legwork of contacting an indigenous person or a native person to talk about their lived experience, to talk about their ancestral experience, then that's where the appropriation really becomes insidious.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it really is solely for using Native identity as a prop for a story that, you know, somebody wants to tell that doesn't even include Native people really who they are in the story itself.
Right. Oh, that's a very good way of putting that. I don't think I've heard it put that way, and that might clear up a lot of misconceptions right there.
I mean, I've had somebody that called me up, and basically what happens is Native writers, when people write stories, is that what they're looking for is authentication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're looking for, you know, the certification. They'll come up and be like, so I have a Native story, and it has these characters. Is that okay? And a lot of us will say, well, that's not, yeah, I mean, that's kind of okay. I haven't read the story, but have you talked to the people in the community? Have you talked to the, you know, the Native nation that you are portraying or a person from that nation that you're portraying about how they would be authentically portrayed? And that person is, well, no, I've talked to somebody, but I just want to make sure that this is not appropriation. It's like, well, then you're not doing your work.
Right.
You know, and I can't give you that authority. If you're writing about, you know, Laguna Pueblo and the people from this particular village, then I can maybe talk to you about my experience, but I'm not the authority on that. You know, I got family members that I'm accountable to.
Right.
I got clan relations that I'm accountable to. So what I can tell you is go talk with people that live in the community. Go learn the you know, go listen to stories and write something that's respectful, representative, and dynamic. What I hate to see most of all is not only are we used as props, but it's always this perpetuation of a tragic narrative. So it's
right.
The dead and dying Indian, right?
Right, right.
It's that Native people, oh, it's so sad what's going to happen to your people or what has happened to your people. And I was like, I'm sorry, we're still here.
Exactly.
So, you know, yes, there was tragedy. Yes, there was colonization. Yes, there was violence perpetuated against Native people. But we made it. And I would rather celebrate that we survived and that we continue to thrive and be brilliant then continue to perpetuate your same old narrative of like, oh, because then that's really just the same way as like, you know, it's like the Green Book, right? It makes non-Native readers happy, you know, because then they can feel their guilty shoes, you know, about what happened to Native people.
Right.
And it was like, that's great. I don't mind you feeling guilty, but you know what? There's still a lot of work to do, so why don't you help us out right now?
Right.
And while you're at it, you know, go out and find really cool Native creators that are making really cool Native comics. You know, forward-thinking Native writers that are out there doing dynamic work and have been for decades now. Go do that. Don't just feel sorry for me.
So is Red Planet Books, then the store itself, the physical store, open most of the time?
We are open Wednesdays through Sundays. Monday and Tuesday, we actually we're there usually in the shop. But we spend Monday and Tuesday, you know, fulfilling orders and doing, you know, general shop stuff. But Wednesday through Sunday, we're open.
Great. And what's the location of that?
It is one block south of Central on 10th Street. So it's 10th and Park. And we're right on the corner. You really cannot miss the building.
I saw a photo of the outside of it.
Yes.
That's great. It's hard to miss,
yep.
I imagine.
Incredible artist that did that for us by the name of Joseph Stacy. Joe Stacy did that for us. He, you know, was just, he had a, I was like, we need an outside building. He's like, I got this. And he put together this beautiful design and created, you know, this wonderful version and vision of what we imagine a red planet looking like. We don't mean Mars, we mean a Native planet, right?
Right.
So that's also sort of the double entendre of the title.
And you have more than just books and comics. You have...
Yep, we got t-shirts, we've got toys, we've got pins, collectibles, we've got games, board games, role-playing games. We've got the only Native role-playing game that's been devised called Edragor, but we carry a bunch of indie role-playing games as well. Bunch of indie tabletop games. We do a bunch of showcases there. We feature community events that happen all the time. Starting in April, we'll be showcasing Game of Thrones. So we, you know, just invite people in to have some food, and we throw up, a screen and we, just like let people come and hang out with us.
Oh, that's great. It sounds like a really fun place. I have to visit next time I'm down there.
Absolutely. You are absolutely welcome and invited.
So what's next on your agenda?
So next on our agenda is the big, we've got our big three conventions that are coming up. We are just releasing a new comic that's an educational comic called Native Entrepreneurs.
Oh.
So we did some work with a entrepreneur company, Heather Fleming, that we did early last spring. And we put a comic book together about showcasing Native entrepreneurship, what that means and, how that looks in our own communities and some tips and tricks that we learned from some great Native entrepreneurs who are working and successful. We put a learning resource together that, has some lesson plans, but also has a fun comic book for people to be able to purchase.
Native entrepreneurs such as yourself.
Native entrepreneurs such as myself. Yeah, I'm honored to be in the space with some other incredible business folks and entrepreneurs. So I consider myself very lucky.
And when should we expect that?
That'll be out within this next month.
And when is the next local Comic-Con or Indie?
The next local is we're expanding, rebranding. It's called Indigenous Pop X Prime,
okay.
And that'll be in Albuquerque, New Mexico, November 5th through the 10th. For up in your area, Denver is not too far away.
Right.
And that'll be Indigenous Pop X Denver, and that will be July 26th through 28th at the McNichols Building in downtown Denver.
Will you costume for that?
I do not costume. I usually tend to be a little bit busier. I always love to. I'm very envious of the folks that get the chance to do that.
Yeah.
My costume is the executive director.
That works.
It's usually comfortable shoes, maybe a hat. Because sometimes there's interviews and a comic T-shirt. So that's what you get to see me in.
You were doing all this while you were getting all these degrees.
We started this right around the time I was transitioning out of my degree. So I got my PhD in education in 2014, and that was right around the time that we were ramping all of this up.
How does your PhD in education inform your bookstore and your promotion of Native American in the comics?
I think it gave me a background around theory, but really it was the exploration of the ways in which Native folks exist in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically within education, there's two sides to it, and they intertwine in so many ways, the formal education and the informal education. And so the transitions between the two sometimes can be very seamless. And so I was working in formal education for a number of years, received my PhD on that side, but then moved into this area and realm of informal education. This ancillary or supportive material is so necessary in our schools. It's not just textbooks. It's the literature that goes with it, and that includes comics and games and toys and all of these pieces that help with formulating and forming our identities. And when that's absent, that becomes, a different type of struggle for Indigenous peoples. And so if we can create that and find that supportive media and materials, then that makes the formalized education, the formal education, much more rich and rewarding.
The different learning styles, and that just adds
different learning
to
styles.
It.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Do you produce any educational material through Native Realities?
Right now, just mostly it's aligned with the comic books, our Tales of the Mighty Code Talkers.
Okay.
Has some back matter material, a lesson plan, and a little bibliography and places to go. And then, the entrepreneur comic is the same. So it actually features 5 lesson plans that can be scaffolded through the various grade levels, K-12. And so, that's how we try and tell these stories. We try and tell a really compelling story and then fill in the back material of okay, so you just read this really compelling story, and now here's some really interesting things that you can use within your classroom.
We used The Code Talker by Judy Avila here on campus. And I was surprised at how few Native Americans even recognized that they had Code Talkers in their ancestry.
Yep, absolutely. And I hear it all the time. I get those stories. They're so great. And somebody will tell me, because we knew there were a lot of service people. We had a lot of service men and women.
Right.
But then they'll say, they were also Code Talkers because there was the two. I mean, we know most of the media goes around the formal Code Talker program, which was the Choctaw and the Cherokee in World War I, and, of course, the Navajo Code Talkers in World War II. But there was all of these informal Code Talker structures where it was two guys from the same tribe or the same community that spoke their language, and they'd be like, you guys are on the other end of the phone. We'll see you later. You know, so they'd be right. put in, you know, a battalion, and because they could speak to each other, they were used in that way. And so we begin to hear, because we're putting out more of this material, we begin to hear more of these stories, which is so beautiful and dynamic. And it's just really delightful, you know, to hear that when it's just like, oh, yeah, there were two Laguna Code Talkers, and there were Acoma Code Talkers, and, you know, they were just two guys that served, but, you know, they gave them a radio.
So I think that what you're doing is just really enhancing not only education, but the whole life experience for a lot of young people, but people of all ages.
Thank you.
And I think you're doing a really important thing.
Thank you so much. No, the main thing that I always tell folks is, you know, usually the question, well, how can we support? And I was like, listen, if it's you come to Red Planet, that's great, but look for this type of, you know, we want people to go and find this type of media and material, you know, that showcases and supports Native people in a way that's just really positive and dynamic and exciting.
Right.
So there's so much out there. You know, go find that, support that, because it's the only way we get to keep making this type of art and continue to do this writing. If people are not doing it, then we're out of luck.
That's
so
right.
So it gives us the chance to be able to do this work if people support it, and that's what we hope for.
And people can find your website, nativerealities.com, right?
Correct. Yep, nativerealities.com.
Great. Well,
wonderful.
Thank you so much, Lee. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much as well. I appreciate the chance to talk about this and all of the folks up there and all of you keeping this great work going as well.
And that was Dr. Lee Francis IV talking about Red Planet books, comics, his own book, Sixth Killer, and many other aspects of Indigenous writing and comics. This is Tracy Hales Vass. Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM, Farmington, New Mexico.